It's gonna be scary. Not for us.
All engine running. Liftoff.
Start on Thompson, steps right, shoots for the win of three. He got it! He got it!
This ain't my first rodeo.
Westbrook to the basket. Turns Schroeder around. Russell Westbrook.
House the three and the lead. You betcha.
Covington, biggest shot of the game, and he hits it. The corner.
PJ Tucker.
Gordon by Gordon Branch.
It's time to accomplish something together that we haven't accomplished before.
We both understand that we have one common goal, and that's to win a championship, so.
Let's get it.
What's up, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Today's episode is brought to you by RockAuto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. As always, I'm your host, Jackson Gatlin, native Houstonian and the founder slash managing editor of ClutchCityControlRoom.com, your home for all things Houston hoops. You can follow me on Twitter at JT Gatlin, the show at Locked On Rockets, and also the blog at ClutchCityCR. So for today's show, we're going to continue along with what we did before, and we're going to do a season in review for Russell Westbrook and kind of break down the expectations, the thoughts kind of coming into the season and kind of where things progressed. And I'm going to use that SWOT analysis again because I really like that. I think it helps to kind of really break a player down into, again, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. But before we get there, I have an update for the Rockets coaching situation. No official word yet on a hire, but some news as far as candidates that have been interviewing. So apparently, as per Jonathan Fagan of the Houston Chronicle, the Rockets coaching search has moved about halfway through their expected initial six interviews as the team has met with the Nuggets assistant coach Wes Unseld Jr. Fagan's a guy, he's got the sources, he's got the saucy sauces. So he has basically said the team has met with Wes Unseld Jr., has met with Steven Silas and Kenny Atkinson. Timberwolves assistant David Vanderpool is scheduled to meet with the team on Friday. And then John Lucas, Rockets director of player development, who has been the head of player development for the last 4 years under coach Mike D'Antoni, is expected to interview within the next few days as well, along with Clippers assistant Ty Lue. Still no word on a Sam Cassell interview. So that's the interesting one is, with as much buzz as there was surrounding Sam Cassell and Ty Lue originally as a couple leading candidates, it does not seem that they have pursued an interview with Sam Cassell. So that is unfortunate there because I was really excited at the possibility of a Sam Cassell hiring. Then Fagan also continues on to say that former Rockets coach Jeff Van Gundy could also interview after the completion of the NBA Finals and his return to Houston. Now, JVG's not currently in the bubble, but the Rockets have indicated that there would still be time for him to complete his work for ESPN and then interview for the position after he returns, a person with knowledge of the situation told Fagan. So Van Gundy hasn't coached in the NBA since he was let go by the Rockets, but has been involved in USA Basketball. Silas was an assistant with the Hornets back in 2016 when he was the runner-up for the position when Mike D'Antoni originally got it. Unseld Jr., top assistant for Michael Malone in Denver, and has been considered a key piece in turning around the Nuggets defense. Now, I say turning around the Nuggets defense. They were still, kind of more of a middle-of-a-pack defensive team, but that's better than being, bottom of the league. Kenny Atkinson was the Rockets player of development, or director of player development, I should say, under Kevin McHale, so the same position that John Lucas currently holds. And then Vanderpool spent seven seasons with the Trailblazers before moving on to the T-Wolves last season and has often been cited for the development of Blazers guards Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum. And then Ty Lue helped the Cavaliers to the championship in 2016 after taking over for David Blatt and has largely been known to be able to kind of work with those superstar type personalities. It's a really interesting situation for any of the coaches that come in. And then John Lucas, can't forget about John Lucas, who's been the head of player development for the last 4 years and has been, in discussions as part of the carousel of potential candidates for the Rockets head coaching position. But it's an interesting spot, right? Because whoever comes in has to be able to manage two superstar players in James Harden and Russell Westbrook, as well as having this very short championship window to try and achieve some pretty lofty goals that the Houston Rockets organization has for whoever steps into the driver's seat. So it's an interesting position, and as always, we'll keep you updated as soon as there's any breaking news or anything going on regarding that head coaching search. So getting to Russell Westbrook and his season, his first year as a Houston Rocket, I think there were a lot of highs and a lot of lows. I think there was a kind of an up and down season. Season started off and things looked a little rough. And I think that it was unfair. I think there were a lot of lofty weighted expectations put on Russ's shoulders at the start of the season, because the expectation was for him to come in and people were expecting him to come in and be MVP Russell Westbrook. And that's just not who he was. You know, it's one, James Harden and Russell Westbrook are similar in that they both have a sky-high usage rating as players. So expecting him to come in and be able to perform at that same MVP level with a reduced usage rating because he's playing alongside James Harden now isn't fair. And not only that, but he was coming in off the, you know, the offseason knee scope. He had the finger wraps around his hand. You know, he wasn't 100% healthy coming into the season. And he really had to kind of work himself into game shape and get a decent rhythm going. And I think once he got that rhythm, once he really kind of got comfortable, and I spoke about this a little bit in the James Harden review, right, is there was a noticeable effort on both of their parts to start the season where they were both going through the growing pains of playing with each other again, is they were trying to figure out how best to attack things, how best to utilize each other when they're on the court. You know, is it your turn, my turn? Is it, do we, you know, run some, two guard pick and rolls? Like, what do we do to maximize each other while we're on the court? And over time, as the season progressed and as those double teams on James Harden became more and more apparent, it became obvious that the easiest way for the two to coexist, or for them to be the most efficient, I should say, was for Russ to be able to attack the defense in those 4-on-3 situations, which largely worked out a lot of the time. Now, it worked out in the regular season before the playoffs rolled around and before Russ was dealing with, you know, the quad injury and, you know, recovering from COVID and all that, because we know that attacking that defense 4-on-3 didn't quite work out so well against the Lakers. Now, that's in part because the Lakers had their peel switching scheme, which was the idea that as soon as they get beat off the dribble, they're switching immediately to the next person. So in practice, the Lakers defense almost looked like a zone at times when it really wasn't. It was man-to-man defense with a wrinkle in it where as soon as they were beat off the dribble, they just rotated to the next guy, which took away a lot of the Rockets' opportunities to make three or to have open three-pointers, because they were able to rely on Anthony Davis to kind of close things off right at the rim. So they were afforded the opportunity to switch as aggressively as they did. So it's almost a switch everything style scheme like the Rockets, but with a wrinkle to it, essentially. And that's what made them so effective against guarding those 4-on-3 situations, as well as the Rockets' lack of decisiveness, their inability to make quick decisions on the fly about, okay, we're going to shoot this shot now, or kind of the bad decisions of driving into the teeth of the Lakers' defense, passing up decent three-point looks in favor of, you know, turnovers or just bad decision making across the board. So, getting back to Russ a little bit with that tangent about the Lakers series, I think that there were a lot of expectations for Russ coming into the season, and I think that when you look at how the season played out, in a way, there's kind of this. It's almost set up exactly how it was with Chris Paul one season ago, where Chris Paul had a really, you know, another down year, a disappointing playoff performance, and he got shipped out for it. You know, it was back-to-back years of disappointing playoff performances. Now, I think with Russ, his season wasn't as disappointing as, say, Chris Paul's was one year ago, especially when you look back at how effective he was in January and February. And that's something that I keep bringing up, and I keep bringing it up because it bears to mention, because it wasn't a fluke. It wasn't just 3 games. It wasn't 5 games. It wasn't just 10 games. It was 2 months straight of Russ playing some of the most efficient basketball of his entire career. And that's what gives me hope and kind of keeps my spirits high for next season, because if that version of Russ, if he's able to come in to next season 100% healthy, and that version of Russ is able to be present and accounted for the entirety of an NBA season, that level of player is easily a all-NBA second team type player. I know he made all-NBA third team this year, but he's an all-NBA second team type player. He's an all-star. That is a borderline MVP level performance from Russ. So if they get that version of Russ, it's kind of set up where Chris Paul had his major bounce back year with OKC, and Russell Westbrook can almost be set up for a bounce back year with the Rockets this next season. And there's certain areas that I think can be improved upon in his game, and we'll talk about those in just a quick moment after a message from our friends over at rockauto.com. Chain stores have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers, whereas RockAuto.com's prices are the same for everybody, and they're always reliably low. RockAuto.com always offers the lowest possible prices rather than changing their prices around based on what the market will bear, kind of like what airlines do. Look, RockAuto.com is for everybody, and they don't require a membership or account login, and on their website, they have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even brand new carpet. So whether it's for your classic or your daily driver, get everything you need in just a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. So go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. And be sure, this is the super duper important part, be sure to write "Locked On" in their "How did you hear about us" box so that they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com. And we're back here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. If you'd like to call into the show, leave a message for us to discuss here at Locked On Rockets, 713-487-5457. As well as, be sure, if you're not already doing so, do me a favor, subscribe to the show, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you listen to your podcast, hit that subscribe button. That way you get the show immediately rather than having to wait for me to go on Twitter and start, you know, talking about it on social media. So, kind of going into this SWOT analysis of Russell Westbrook, strengths, weaknesses in this segment, and then opportunities and threats in the final segment, let's go into Russ's strengths, right? And Russ's strengths are pretty apparent. He's an excellent driver. That's the most lethal part of his game, is when he's driving to the rim, he's at his best. If he's not driving to the rim, he's largely hurting the team because he's not a very efficient mid-range jump shooter. He's just not an efficient shooter whatsoever. So driving to the rim, playing in transition, rebounding, and playmaking. And those are his four core strengths, you know, right? Driving to the rim, drawing in the defense, creating shots for others, and then rebounding. He is an excellent rebounder for a guard his size. That's largely due to his athleticism, the fact that he's able to soar into the air and snatch rebounds out of the sky over even 7-footers sometimes. And his energy, I think, is that final strength is, you know, so it's more of an intangible. It's not something that you're really going to ever be able to measure. But Russ's intensity, his ferocity, the fire that he brings is absolutely one of his strengths, which leads me into his weaknesses, because I do think that at times that intensity, that frustration, not I don't want to say frustration, the ferocity that he plays with, right? The fire. It can be detrimental at times. Sometimes when the game needs to be slowed down a little bit, when things need to be, again, a little bit more methodical or slowed down, like James Harden's style of play, sometimes that chaos can be a little bit detrimental. But I think largely it's more often to the betterment of the team than it is detrimental. So I will go with that. But it is a double-edged sword and can be. His other weaknesses, some of them are very apparent. Shooting and defense at times, and then turnovers. And this is something that I left off of James Harden's that I realized, and I don't think is fair, because I'm not going to mention it for Russ and also not mention it for Harden. So I'm kind of lumping them together now in this one weakness segment. But Russ is very turnover prone. And so is James Harden. And it makes sense for two guys with usage ratings as high as theirs. It makes sense that they're going to be turnover prone. But at the same time, they need to limit their turnovers. And I say limit because they need to limit the really stupid ones. Like, there's just really bad turnovers that they have sometimes. And I'm talking like the live ball turnovers that lead to an easy 2 points for the other team. You know, if it's they're shooting a bullet pass across the court and it goes off the fingertips of Eric Gordon as he's trying to, you know, run the fast break and it goes out of bounds, dead ball turnovers are fine. Dead ball turnovers do not lead to easy transition opportunities for the other team. It's the live ball turnovers that are absolutely backbreaking. And so Harden and Russ are both culprits of that. Russ sometimes because he gets a little bit too frantic with the basketball, and then Harden because he gets a little bit too lazy with the basketball sometimes. Sometimes he gets a little too cutesy with his passes, or, you know, he doesn't put enough mustard behind it, and it's very easy for the opposing team to pick off. So I do think that turnovers are an issue for both of them. But going back to Russ's shooting, I think that when you're looking at his numbers, you know, nothing inspires a lot of confidence about Russ's shooting, and I think one of the biggest issues is at times his shot selection. And that's why January, February was so impressive, because he completely eliminated the shots that weren't efficient. He completely eliminated the three-pointers, and he utilized the mid-range, but not nearly as much as he was in the early season. And I think the reason that he was doing it so much in the early season is because he wasn't quite 100% there to where he had the level of explosion that he needed to be able to get to the rim comfortably the way that he was used to. So when that happens, right, when your body isn't 100%, you're going to revert to an easier style of play. And I think we saw chunks of that in the playoffs as well, with Russ dealing with that quad injury and not being quite 100%, as well as dealing with the after effects of COVID-19. Russ wasn't as explosive as he normally likes to be. And so for a guy who relies on his athleticism so much, that kind of led to the, you know, Russell Westbrook reverting to, you know, quote unquote, old Russ, which is the Russ that, you know, takes bad shots, you know, is okay taking three-pointers, you know, operates out of the mid-range a little bit too much. You know, he's, at the end of the day, he's not a good mid-range shooter. He never has been, and he really never will be, and that's okay. I'm okay with him taking some mid-range shots as long as they're within the flow of the game and he's not forcing things and he's using them more as a tool to get in rhythm to then continue attacking the rim, because that's where he thrives. If Russ is attacking the rim, he's at his best, right? He finished this past year and shot, what was it? At the rim, he was shooting a ridiculous, 60-something percent at the rim. It was unbelievable. He had one of his best. Sorry, this past regular season, it was 57% at the rim inside the restricted area. But he was able to convert a great deal of the shots at the cup. And for me, when he's not attacking the rim, he's doing himself a disservice. Now, I understand he's not a 2K player. You can't just spam right trigger and go at the rim every single possession. But that's where he thrives. And I think that's what I'm going to bring up in the opportunities section and in the threats section. I have a couple of things that I want to hit on, and we'll get there in just a moment after a quick message from our friends over at Built Bar. Protein bars can be a great part of your day if you check out BuiltBar.com. I'm telling you, they've got so many great different flavors. Cookies and cream, carrot cake, coconut, mint chocolate brownie, my personal favorite, the double chocolate mousse. Just can't go wrong with it. These bars, they're not even like protein bars. They're basically candy bars that are jam-packed with protein. They're covered in 100% delicious chocolate. They're soft. They're easy to chew. They're not gritty or chalky like some other protein bars on the market. They're great for the health-conscious person, whether you're trying to lose or maintain weight. They're low-cal, low-sugar, high-protein, high-fiber, amazing for a keto diet. Every single one of these bars has in between like 17 to 20 grams of protein. They are just jam-packed, and you can check them out. Just go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll get $10 off. That's 10 bucks off your very next order. So remember, that's promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off at BuiltBar.com. And final segment here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. To stay up to date with the show, be sure to follow me on Twitter at JT Gatlin, and of course the show at Locked On Rockets. Now, as I mentioned, I want to hit on this crucial opportunity here. And so jumping right into the opportunity section, to me, I think there's two very clear-cut opportunities for Russ to improve his game here in Houston. And the first of which, it makes a lot of sense because at the end of the day, taking the ball out of James Harden's hands and putting it more in Russ's hands is not beneficial. You know, I think that you can take the ball out of Harden's hands a little bit because Russ is a ball handler and he is your other superstar guard. But at the end of the day, James Harden is your best player on this team. And taking the ball out of your best player's hands is not an ideal scenario whatsoever. But that being said, this opportunity for me is Russ utilizing more cutting in his game. He's so adept at finishing around the rim. He's so lethal when he gets the ball and is going downhill towards the basket. And we've seen it throughout the season. We saw it in spurts. We saw it even a couple times in the playoffs against the Lakers where Russ makes a really beautiful cut towards the rim, either as James Harden is driving or as another player is driving, and he's able to catch a pass, take one dribble, and be right there at the rim and either finish with a dunk or an easy lay-in for two. And I think that in large part for a guy who is a non-shooter in Russ, cutting needs to be a part of his game that he utilizes significantly more. I mean, think back to the regular season. Think back to the vicious alley-oop slam over Rudy Gobert, where James Harden drove the ball in and then lofted the ball up as Russ cuts in from the baseline and yams the ball home through the rim. Like, Russ is a great candidate to be a cutter in this Rockets offense. He just is. He has all the right tools to be an excellent cutter, and it just doesn't make sense that they never really utilized him that way and that they would rather have him sit on the perimeter and just kind of either A, have to take a three-point shot, which isn't as ideal, or B, just have him sit on the perimeter until the double teams approach James Harden, and then Russ gets the opportunity to attack 4-on-3. Now, those 4-on-3 opportunities work, so, you know, they convert a decent amount of those, but at the same time, we saw, you know, against the Lakers, a team that was, you know, the best defensive team in the league was able to counter that 4-on-3 because they were doing everything they needed to do as far as rotations and being in the right spots to shut down that 4-on-3 advantage and give them enough time to get the double team off of James Harden and get their defense reset in the half court. And to me, those 4-on-3 situations, in a way, mimic what Golden State gets to do with Steph Curry, right? Is over the years, we've seen Steph Curry get double teamed, not quite to the level that James Harden did this past season, but when you think about the Steph Curry double teams, what happens, right? Steph gets doubled and then kicks the ball to Draymond Green. And Draymond Green is in the same position that Russell Westbrook is in, where it's his choice to either A, attack the defense, or B, create a shot for somebody else to then decide, okay, you know, if the defense chooses to, you know, guard me, then I'm kicking the ball to an open shooter. It's the same concept. It's a 4-on-3 concept. The only difference is, and I felt this a lot during the Lakers series, is it really feels like when the Rockets, were trying to attack in that 4-on-3 situation, Russ was always in between the rings when he was receiving those passes. So he would cut in and be about, you know, right around the free throw line as James Harden's trying to get him that pass. Whereas when the Warriors utilize that 4-on-3 opportunity, Draymond Green is above the break. He's above the three-point line. And Draymond is just as much of a non-shooter as Russell Westbrook is, and defenses treat him as such. So to me, I've never understood why they felt the need for Russ to be that embedded that deep into the defense when he could start from the three-point line, because it only takes Russ one or two dribbles from the three-point line to be right at the rim anyways. So I didn't really understand why they felt the positioning of that needed to be, you know, 5 or 6 feet forward as opposed to catching the ball behind the three-point line, turning, surveying the defense, and then choosing to attack or choosing to create for somebody else. Because the issue for me is that a lot of the times that those plays were broken up, that those double teams were effective, is because James wasn't able to safely get the pass to Russ or to another player. And it feels like to me that by elongating that distance from where the double team or where the trap happens into where Russell Westbrook has to receive the pass, that's where, I mean, in just immediately, I'm already thinking of like specifically the one opportunity, and I know this happened multiple times, but specifically the one where LeBron James had the pass sniffed out the entire way. As soon as the double team hit James Harden, LeBron was guarding the corner three-point shooter and was able to jump in and snatch the pass at the free throw line, because as soon as the double team hit James Harden, LeBron was already on the move. He took two steps towards Russell Westbrook, who was sitting at the free throw line, and snatched the ball out of the air because he knew it was coming. He predicted it. And it's predictable because the Rockets didn't really have another way to counter it. It was just, okay, James is getting doubled. It's either going to be, you know, the three-point shooter who's in the weak side slot is going to run up and be the bailout pass, or Russ or PJ Tucker is going to run in between the rings and try and catch the pass in the middle of the floor and then create for somebody else. But that middle of the floor catch is so difficult because, again, James is about 20 to 25 feet away while trying to make that pass over two defenders. And there's other Lakers defenders that are playing the passing lanes who were able to get in there like LeBron James did in the situation that I just described. So to me, I'd like to see Russ. I kind of got away from the main point there, but the cutting element of Russ's game can be utilized. And I think that when you're looking at how to diversify this Rockets offense, there needs to be more motion, first off. Everybody should be able to cut rather than just standing idle at the three-point line. But Russ, especially as a non-shooter, should be able to add that more to his game. Which brings me to my second opportunity point for Russ is corner three-point shooting. I know that it's not an ideal situation to think, okay, well, let's get Russ as a shooter. But at the end of the day, he's a career 30% three-point shooter. And in the corners specifically, he's had some success over his career shooting the three ball out of the corners. So maybe it's a situation where if you're able to park Russ in the corner, that gives him kind of a dual threat opportunity, right? He can either stay in the corner as a three-point shooter, or if he's reading the defense properly, he can cut in for an easy two at the rim. And that gives him opportunities to still shoot the ball and to still kind of prove that he can be a three-point threat, and maybe keep defenses a little bit more honest, because we're seeing defenses guard Russ by just backing all the way off and staying down at the free throw line, which is ridiculous. That's how defenses used to guard Rajon Rondo. And I think it's a little bit disrespectful to Russ that they're doing so. So you put him in a position where the corner three-point shot is the easiest three-point shot to hit on the court. It's the shortest distance from the rim. So you put him in the corner and you allow him to take some corner threes, you know, throughout a game. You know, I'm not saying he needs to average 6 or 7 three-point attempts, but if he's in the corner, let him take the shot, because that's an easier three-point shot to hit. And I think it does provide other benefits in the sense of, if he's operating out of the corner, then when James drives the ball in, if James is the primary ball handler on that possession, it gives Russ the opportunity to read the defense and to then choose if he wants to cut or stay in the corner as a three-point shooter. And that, I think, can lead to some, you know, some productive offense and some good, you know, back and forth between those two guys. And similarly, when Russ is operating right as the primary ball handler, James Harden needs to be looking for, you know, ways to get himself open rather than just standing idle all the way back at the half court line. And that was something that I talked about, James Harden, you know, getting more motion, getting more off-ball movement into his opportunities as well. Because, again, Russ can be the primary ball handler if James is also using his gravity as a threat away from the ball to create a shot for himself or to space the floor for everybody else. Now, into the final section of the SWOT analysis, threats to Russell Westbrook, right? Threats involve, you know, as far as what we need to worry about for him. And it's along the similar lines of James Harden, it's his usage, the idea that, you know, Russ does need to be monitored. This past season, he did the load management. He didn't play the second nights of back-to-backs. I wonder if they'll continue that plan of attack moving forward, especially with the quad injury and the worries about him. But for me, my biggest concern with Russ, more so than James Harden, is his athletic decline. And when is it going to happen? Because when Russ's athletic decline hits, it's going to be bad. And we have to face that truth, is that when Russell Westbrook starts to decline athletically and doesn't have the same level of explosiveness that he once did, he is not going to be the same player. He's not Chris Paul. He doesn't have a reliable, you know, mid-range or three-point game to fall back on as he gets older. And that's what makes the stomaching the Russell Westbrook contract so difficult. Now, I don't think he's shown any signs of like significant athletic decline. I think that it's tough to gauge where his body was at during these past playoffs because, again, he was dealing with a quad injury. That's not Father Time catching up to Russell Westbrook. That's just a quad injury hampering him a little bit. I think those things are drastically different. An injury is different than Father Time eventually saying, okay, your time's up. You know, you're going to be a little bit slower. Your lateral quickness is going to go away. Your hops are going to go away. It's none of that. It's just an injury. So I think if he gets his body right, gets healthy, and comes into next season, I think we'll see pretty quickly, is he, you know, still the same level of Russ that he was this past season, which, again, this past season was a totally acceptable level of athleticism. He was phenomenal this past season, and he was MVP caliber Russ for 2 months during the season. So if you get that level of Russell Westbrook back to start this next NBA season, paired alongside James Harden, along with whatever changes the team is going to make in the offseason, as well as bringing in a new head coach who can hopefully be that kind of lightning in a bottle and really jolt the team and really energize them and be that missing piece, that missing element on the way towards title contention. Look, whenever you have two former MVPs on your team, you have a legitimate shot at a title. I don't care if the Lakers are in the way. I don't care if Golden State Warriors are coming back into the fold. I don't care if the Clippers, you know, get their situation figured out. The Rockets are still a good team. They're not going to be championship favorites by any foreseeable metric, but by that same token, you know, you look at the Boston Celtics or the Toronto Raptors or the Denver Nuggets, and they're kind of in that tier of team. I think the only two teams that you can, or really the only team that you can look at moving into next season as far as being a championship favorite team are going to be the probable repeat or, you know, defending champions, LA Lakers, because that's just how their dynamic is with LeBron James and Anthony Davis. So, but past that, I don't think there's really any favorites past that because every team has their flaws. And it's just about the Rockets trying to assess those flaws and figure out a way to cover those gaps and be as whole as they can be going into next season with roster changes, personnel changes, and bringing in the right head coach to utilize this roster and these two superstars in this little, like, 1 to 2 year window that they have left to compete for a title. So I think that's going to do it for today's episode. As always, thank you so much for listening, and we look forward to having you back right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.